Welcome to Hazel and Katniss and Harry and Star, a young adult literature podcast, their film and television adaptations, and everything in between. I'm Joe.
And I'm Brenna.
And our show is located on the ancestral lands of the Haudenosaunee, the Huron-Wendat, and the Anishinaabe on lands connected to the Toronto Purchase, Treaty 13 of 1805.
And on the Tecumloops Te Sequeton territory within the unceded traditional lands of Sequeton Ulu. And today's text, Never Been Kissed, takes place in Chicago, the traditional home of the Peoria, Potawatomi, Miamia, Kaskaskia, and Kickapoo peoples. Joe?
Mm-hmm.
We are watching this because this movie is old.
Or maybe we are old, Brenna. Yes, because this is a movie that is celebrating its 25th anniversary.
So I had never seen this, which I know is never surprising to you.
Not really. No, at this point, it's a gimme.
And I think that this maybe was a movie you needed to watch 25 years ago. I'm excited to get into it with you because I'm curious about what still worked for you.
Mm-hmm.
On this rewatch and what you maybe would be happy to let go.
Yeah. Let me run down the cast list and then I'll talk to you ad nauseum about nostalgia.
My semester in high school.
Josie Geller, you enroll Friday.
You are looking at the newest undercover reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times.
You're kidding, right? Josie, do you remember high school?
Josie!
So, you were a geek. Big deal.
You get to be 17 again.
Okay, feeling good.
Welcome to Shakespeare's As You Like It.
Are you sure you're 17?
I'm 17. Of course.
She's never been hip. Oh. This is where the stories are.
She's never been cool.
You will become friends with these people.
Houston, Kristen, Gibby. What's up, girlfriends?
Are you in special ed?
And she's never been sexy.
You will party with them. Ugh. You'll rave with them. You're gonna get jiggy with them.
Until now.
All you need is one person to think you're cool and you're in.
You can't just come in here, be popular in one day.
Know that girl of Josie Geller?
She used to date the drummer from the Big Bad Voodoo Daddies.
Shut up.
It's true.
So let's hear it.
I'm not Josie Grossi anymore.
I'm not Josie Grossi anymore! Yeah!
20th Century Fox presents...
Guy is totally crunching on you.
Drew Barrymore.
Do I want to be crunched?
Oh, yeah.
In a story about getting a second chance...
I've waited my whole life to fit in, and I finally feel like I do.
...to make a first impression.
You've been hiding something from everyone.
No, I haven't.
Okay, so Never Been Kissed is written by Abby Cohn and Mark Silverstein. It is directed by Raja Gosnell, and it stars a fairly substantial cast of people who would go on to be quite famous or already were relatively famous in 1999. So, we have, of course, Drew Barrymore as Josie Grossi Geller, and she is a Chicago Sun-Times reporter. She's in her mid-20s, but she has yet to blossom. So, we have David Arquette as her brother, Rob, and then her office co-workers are boss John C. Reilly as Gus, as well as Molly Shannon as Anita, and in a blink-and-you-miss-it performance, we also have Octavia Spencer sort of lurking around, but as I told you in a text, she was not famous, so that's why she barely appears in this movie.
Apparently she had a name, but you'd never know it. Can I also just say, Joe, that this is such an understated John C. Reilly performance? I forgot
that he
wasn't always like Mr. Broad Comedy.
Yeah, this is definitely understated. It's fun. I like the romance between him and Molly Shannon quite a bit. But these are broad characters, right? This is a four-quadrant crowd pleaser of a comedy. So some of the performances are quite big, but even, you know, someone like Gus, he's less of a character and more of a sitcom plot.
Fair.
Okay, so... obviously, that plot involves Josie going back to high school as an undercover reporter. one of the things I love about this movie is how completely unconvincing she and David Arquette are as, like, 17-year-olds.
I just also, and I know we're going to talk about, like, movies that don't exist in time anymore, but, like, how unrealistic is the premise? First of all, that a major city still has two newspapers. Second of all, that a newspaper has this many employees. Third of all, that she could go undercover for like months and produce a single story and everybody's like, yeah, this is cost effective.
100%. Yeah, like the idea that this would have to become a phenomenon in Chicago to just merit the cost of this is astronomical. And this is why it's a movie. Fair. So, yes, as we said, the plot is that Frank Marshall, who is Mr. Rigfort, the editor or the person in charge of the paper, says, we don't understand our kids, so we need to send this undercover reporter in. So Josie's task is to befriend people. So she initially makes friends with Aldous, who is Lily Sobieski. And of course, the name sounds like Alpo or dog food. So she's a nerd, hence the nickname. And then we have the cool kids. So the one guy that everybody falls in love with is Guy, who is played by Jeremy Jordan. And then we have the mean girls, we'll call them. They're not really mean, but they sort of are. We've got Kirsten, who is played by Jessica Alba. Gibby, who is played by Jordan Ladd. And Kristen, who is Marley Shelton. Brenna, should I just continue? Should I do the plot as we go?
Yeah, you could do the plot. You haven't mentioned the forgettable boys, though. We do have an early James Franco role here. Well.
This is true, yes. future sex pest James Franco is here. We also have... You know what? The other boys don't matter.
No, they really don't. They don't really matter. Okay, go ahead.
Brenna texted me and she was like, these boys are so inconsequential, I don't think they have character names.
And then at the end, they say their names like you're supposed to know who they are. And I was like, what? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it is true. Yeah. So the plot, as it were, is that Josie needs to find some kind of undercover expose, something that's going to be shocking. So it's not going to be the coleslaw ingredients in the cafeteria. It's not going to be how the girls buy clothes, keep the tags on, and then return it. No, it ends up being the final member of our cast, Brenna, and I think the piece you probably had the most trouble with, which is, oops, I've fallen in love with Teacher, who is played by Michael Vartan.
And Teacher fell in love back, which is the worst part.
Okay, so here's the thing. I knew going into this that you would have a major problem with this. We've talked about it on the show before. We'll talk about it on the show in the future. We're not fans of this idea that it's sexy or fun or hot for teenagers to fall in love with adults. The reason that I give this movie a slight pass, I'm definitely willing to acknowledge it's not a thing that has aged well. I would actually argue it doesn't play particularly well in 1999. People did have issues with it then, too. The reason I give it the pass is because this falls in line with what we were doing in the late 90s, where we adapted Shakespeare titles as contemporary YA. So we're doing As You Like It, which is all about Rosalind falling in love with someone in disguise. So basically, you have to finesse the age gap and say, well, the truth is, Josie is not a teenager. So it's fine for him to actually fall in love with her in the same way that it's okay for Rosalind to be, in quotations, a boy falling in love with someone.
But the whole time he's falling in love with her, he thinks she's 17, which is also stupid because she doesn't look 17.
Yeah, I acknowledge. I mean, I think part of it is that he knows that it's inappropriate as well. And that's why he's attracted to her, but he tries to keep his distance. And then that's why he's really hurt and he moves away, or he tries to. So I can't fully excuse it, but the movie also is very careful to never actually put them together romantically until after the secret has come out and she is legally of age in everyone's minds.
Yeah, I mean, nothing actually happens in the film, but there's just a very uncomfortable vibe between them for the entire movie. Like, even just when he's like watching her recite her soliloquy in English class, it's like, don't look at her like that, you gross old man.
And of course, the extra fun part is that I want to say about halfway through the film, Josie gets pulled aside and basically told, oh, we're going to babysit you via a wireless camera that is in the form of a brooch you now have to wear, because she's so bad at picking up the stories. So everyone in the office becomes addicted to it like it's a daytime television soap opera.
I did like that.
And of course, they're picking up all the vibes that Mr. Coulson is throwing down.
And I think, you know, we haven't mentioned the kind of the stakes, which is that Josie is a copy editor and she wants to be a writer. And right. She's been kind of like pigeonholed into this role as a copy editor, and nobody thinks she can write. It turns out they're absolutely correct.
You're so mean.
She has no journalistic instincts whatsoever.
Well, that is true. Yeah.
I'm not coming down like super hard on this movie. It's cute. There are moments of it that are super cute. But I really think that it's a weird premise in 2024. And if don't have kind of like nostalgic warm vibes for it, it's kind of like, what am I watching? I mean, it's fine, but it's like weird. And why did they make this?
I had a feeling when I wasn't getting anything from you, and then I got a last minute flurry of texts from you, that this was going to be similar to our conversation from something like Bring It On or even Step Up, where I had definitely seen these titles when they had first come out. I had grown an appreciation for them, or I watched them with my sister and we would quote them to each other and so on. And you coming in from a much more contemporary perspective would look at it and say, okay, yeah, some of this is kind of fun, but also WTF, what are we doing with this?
That is basically how I feel. I think there are set pieces that really work. Like, I love everything about the decathletes. I love that montage.
Of course you do.
I find, or what are they called? Denominators. I find them all adorable. Yeah. Love them. There's stuff to do with the classroom scenes where, like, Josie having to hide the fact that she just has the basic general knowledge of a 25-year-old, which, like, even not counting her college education, she's trying hard to, like, be a teenager and failing. And those moments are funny. I think Drew Barrymore sells most of them. I don't love her, but I don't mind her in this role.
Yeah. So this is the first film that she ends up putting out under her own production company. So I do feel like she maybe had something that she wanted to prove with this. You know, obviously it's a star vehicle for herself. Mm-hmm. And there's something to be said about how it leans into her inherent cuteness, even to the point where I feel like they dial up her natural lisp.
Yes.
So this is maybe the lispiest performance you will ever get from Drew Barrymore, which I think really enhances some of the comedic delivery, because she seems so simultaneously childlike, but also naive. And I think that's what helps to sell some of the broader comedy. Like, there's a lot of physical pratfall. She's getting hit in the face with doors.
Falls on her face a lot.
She falls on her face a lot, which I'm never a huge fan of, particularly when it comes to women or specifically teenagers, because I'm just like, yeah, I get it. We're gangly. But I wasn't seeing somebody fall every time they entered school. No. That would be a bit much. But I look back on this so fondly with certain scenes, like where she goes to the club to try to impress the trio of girls because she has learned, okay, you need to get in with them because what they're doing is the hot stuff. They become the subject of an expose in the rival paper. And she has nowhere to sit. Josie doesn't. So she sits down with a group of Rastafi, and then she inadvertently eats a pot brownie and dances stupidly on stage. It's horribly embarrassing. And when she wakes up in the morning, she has eaten an entire pie. And she has half of the club, which is the loser, on her forehead as a stamp. And it just says loser.
Yeah. Yeah.
You could see it coming a mile away.
Oh, absolutely. But it's cute.
But it's all still funny.
Yeah, it's very funny. She's very funny in that moment. The broad comedy, I think, works the best with her in this role. And I think that it works.
You're like, that is as much as I am willing to give you.
Well, it's funny. Like, I don't actually want to come down super hard on it. Like, the premise creeps me out. But I wasn't, like, I don't think, we've watched far more problematic movies than this.
Oh,
like,
gosh, yes. Yes, 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 yes.
I'm not condemning it. I just, I think that this movie needs a patina of nostalgia to work.
Okay. So I'm curious, because I do think one of the things that continues to work for me, I will admit, I get suckered by the romance. I know it's inappropriate, but when we have that moment and the Beach Boys song kicks in for the very last, it's melodramatic and it's saccharine, and yes, it's inappropriate, but also at this point in the film, it is not, and the romantic in me really, really enjoys it.
All right.
But let's have a conversation about how this film is actually not a young adult text, but it traffics in the tropes.
Yeah, well, that's a great point, because the perspective is not teenage at all. In fact, the perspective is, look how goofy teenagers are, right? I mean, that's really the premise. And so if we were reading it in a novel, we would not classify this novel as young adult because of that, because the perspective is one of looking down and looking back, not of the moment itself.
Yeah. I think if anything, what intrigues me from this perspective is how we can look at it as simultaneously not young adult, because the perspective is wrong, as you just said, but then it simultaneously is young adult, because it's very much that coming of age story. Like, we've not talked about the flashbacks to Josie in her horrendous real high school experience, where she was bullied, she was the subject of a really cruel prank, which of course is classic YA territory, and how it really scarred her, and I would even argue emotionally stunts her, to the point where the way she behaves is almost like she never moved past her teenage years.
Yeah, well, she's not going to take a risk of ever opening up to another boy after that, right? Like, that's really, I mean, she's stunted in her romantic development, even as she has a very successful career, even if it's not the career she wanted, it's the less risky career, right? She went to university, she was successful, but she didn't take a risk in going to a place like Dartmouth. It's like, there's all of these sort of ways in which she took the safer path because of that moment of humiliation. And from that perspective, I buy what you're saying, that like, this is almost like a delayed or a stunted coming of age story. I think the reason why I still say it's not YA is because there is a level at which, like, the film is not gentle on the teenagers, right? Like, there's a level at which it's almost sneering at them and using the tropes as a way to mock them, which I think is fine. I mean, it's funny. Like, that's the perspective, is like, oh my God, being an adult back in high school, these people are all idiots. Like, that is funny. but it takes away from the kind of like the humanity of the teenagers. There's really only one teenager who gets humanity, right? And it's the bullied girl, whatever her name is, dog food.
Alpos.
That's it.
I would argue that there's a moment of quiet introspection for Guy. When we get the montage at the end of the film, as people around Chicago are all simultaneously reading this editorial, whatever, that's fine. It's completely unrealistic. Whatever. There's this moment where, you know, the most popular boy in school and everybody's saying hello, and he pauses right on the precipice of entering the building and has this kind of, something is missing. Something has been lost by not having this girl in my life who I presumed was a special teenager. And, you know, we can say it's very facile because he only treated her that way because her brother got her into the popular group. But I think there's still that moment where it's like, oh, maybe I do need to be a better person, because if not, I would have missed out on that.
That's very generous.
It is more generous than the film explicitly states.
Can we talk a little bit about the director?
Yes.
Because I'm curious about what you think of the direction of this film.
Yeah, if you look at Gosnell's other films, they are often very broad. They're big comedies. They're very colorful. So I do think it's a good fit for the material. Like, this is the director of the Scooby-Doo live action films. And you can almost see this working, not quite in tandem with those, because those are very goofy, but they do have the same kind of candy colored artifice.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that.
What did you think of the direction?
I didn't quite know what to think of the direction, to be honest. It's hard to, you know, it's hard to always know, like, what's the actor's choice? What's the director's choice? I was interested to see the selection of this particular director, because given that it's Drew Barrymore's, like, big push, Like, yeah. It's her big production. She's clearly, like, interested in making, as you said, a star vehicle for herself. Like, I think the only thing he had directed before this was Home Alone 3. So mm-hmm. It's just an interesting choice. I do kind of want to read my favorite sentence in the history of Wikipedia to you, Joe.
Sure.
Okay. Critics gave mixed reviews to the film, with a rotten score of 55% on review aggregation website Rotten Tomatoes, based on 91 reviews, making it Raja Gosnell's highest rated film.
That's a nice backhanded compliment, isn't it? Oh my God,
the way it's phrased is just like, mwah, it's just beautiful.
Like the words rotten with highest rated film. Mean. I mean, yeah, mean. Here's the thing. You can be a very successful, very bankable director and make a bunch of not very well-received films. This could be considered a bit of a tension point between what quote-unquote audiences disagree with critics on, though, right? Mm. Because if you look at how successful even the Scooby-Doo films were compared to something where it's like, oh, it's austere, it's prestigious, but also it made $0. Yeah. Like, there can be a disconnect there.
Yeah, that's fair. And I note that, like, you know, he's been very financially successful as a director. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I think in 2024, you would expect that a child actress who is looking to be taken seriously as a producer would have selected potentially a more prestigious director. So I just think the combination, the pairing here is really, like, interesting.
Yeah, I'll confess this is one of those areas where I don't know how much control Barrymore still has. Like, she could be responsible for putting up some of the funds for this or saying, like, this is the story I want to tell, but then she may not have had control over the script or the director or some of those technical elements. It's one of those things where you would have to find out to really know.
Yeah, fair point.
So there is one final piece that I would like to discuss with you before we maybe wrap up this conversation on a film you were fine with. And that is the film's smartest move, which is using David Arquette's Rob as a character. Like, the film has a decent push in terms of momentum at the offset, because we're telling the introduction to Josie, we have to introduce all these other characters and get the story going. And then it almost immediately hits the skids because it's like, how much humiliation can Josie take as an adult in high school? And then the film brings in Rob, and that's when we flip the script because he makes her popular. So we get to see the reverse side and how much it hurts the friend she had made before and how much she has to compromise to fit in. And I think it's just a really smart use of David Arquette, who is so charismatic in this movie. Yes. And his relationship with the 16-year-old girl I have way more issues with than the relationship Josie has with Michael Vartan. It's also very
distressing. Goes to the dance in his underwear.
Yeah. Even when he's like, I'm going to turn you down for sex at the prom, but also let's go cut it up on the dance floor. It's like, get your adult hands off that teenage girl.
Yes, correct.
But, you know, I guess I wanted to tie this into your criticism or response that the movie is actually pretty hard on teenagers. And I think that's one of the most interesting things about it, is so much of it is that candy-coated fantasy, right? Like, this is such a broad comedy in some ways. But what I really like is about how it exposes the hypocrisy inherent in the social hierarchy of high school, right? Where Josie really hasn't done anything that bad. Like, she's very awkward, but whatever. And yet, all Rob has to do is come in, eat an entire vat of coleslaw, and then vouch for her, and suddenly she wins prom queen.
Well, he vouches for her, but he also has to knit a web of lies, right?
Well, so, like, there is that too.
There's so many things that she has to effectively pretend to be true in order to achieve that popularity, which of course is in contrast with Aldous, who likes her immediately and is friends with her immediately.
Right.
For exactly who she is as a person, blah, 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 blah. So I think you're totally right. And I think you're also correct that David Arquette does a great job in this role. I don't always like him. He's perfect here. I think that he actually lends a lot of likability to Josie's character, because by that point in the film, you're kind of like, as you say, like, how much humiliation can one person take? But also, like, how bad can one person be at being in the world socially, right? Like,
she's so bad at reading the room.
If we had to push that plot line any further, it would become impossible to go along with. So you're right that he's perfect in that moment.
Yeah. I guess the other thing that I really end up enjoying about this film is how it does try to create its own vernacular. So totally one of the criticisms is totally Rufus.
This movie is so Rufus.
I will confess, I do use Rufus
in my everyday life.
I legitimately do in the same ironic way that I would use Fetch from Mean Girls.
Okay.
But every once in a while, I will throw it out there just to see if anybody is picking up what I'm putting down. So if I like something, I will say, oh, it's Fetch, it's Rufus, it's Aces.
Okay.
I'm a loser. You can call me on it. It's fine. You know what? I've got the stamp on my forehead to prove it.
I want to mention one more thing, which is that this soundtrack is amazing.
It's great.
It's so good. The Moffats are on it. If you really want to go 90s deep cut, like, you bypass Hanson and you go to the Moffats, right? Yeah, and Canadian, absolutely. But one thing I didn't notice until I was reading, like, the IMDb stuff is that credit song, the song over the credits, is performed by the guy who played Guy Perkins.
Oh, Jeremy Jordan?
Yeah, and I can't help but think, like, that was supposed to do something for him. Oh, you know maybe. What I mean? Like, but I mean, it didn't. But I'm just saying, no. It's like you put his song over the closing credits and it's like, oh, this guy's going to be a star one day.
Well,
or not.
In the same way that we tried to, you know, do a Jennifer Love Hewitt song over the sequel to I Know What You Did Last Summer. And it's like, yeah, how do I deal? I'm going to get hate for that, by the way.
I would like to invite you to consider purchasing the remix album Jeremy the Remix, released to overseas markets in 1993.
You know what? I'll save up my pennies and see if I can splurge on a bootleg.
Amazing. Love it.
Shall we play some YA bingo with this?
Let's do it.
Bingo!
Not a good bingo.
All right. What have you got?
I'm going to go with coincidental classes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Really helpful that we're doing that Shakespeare play.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we've got some sexual awakenings happening, particularly for Rob's prom date, among others.
Gross.
It's gross. It is. And you're right that it's grosser. You were right to point that out. We do have a female screenwriter, a female co-screenwriter anyway.
Yep.
This film has a hard time with friendships. I think nobody gets enough screen time for any of the friendships to develop. So they all feel really hollow. But I wanted Aldous and Josie to have a more deeper, longer friendship.
Yeah, I'll confess it's the tricky part that I have with when Josie becomes popular, we just lose this other character. And yeah, she gets a few good biting moments. And obviously, we nearly do Carrie at the prom, as Rob himself notes. But there's something that doesn't quite satisfy when that character shows back up at the end, where she's firmly on Josie's side with Anita, as though, like, these are two of Josie's best friends. And you're thinking, no, the movie didn't quite earn that.
Yeah, no. I mean, just because she stopped dog food from being thrown at her doesn't mean everything's good now.
No, not at all.
Oh my God, sorry. Jeremy Jordan, that actor is actually older than Drew Barrymore.
Yeah. It's one of those, you know what? We can just say, we're just going to give this a forever young / aged up in both categories because of Jeremy Jordan and also because of, you know, adults going back to high school.
Well, it's funny because I had that in my notes and apparently I didn't even, like, blink at it. 1973. I must have read it as 83. I don't know what I read it as. Anyway. Okay, here's one I always find hard when we're looking to the past, but, like, stunt casting. Like, I feel like Molly Shannon, was she a stunt cast at that time? Obviously, Gary Marshall would have been.
Yeah, Gary Marshall is the, if you know him, this is a big fun thing. And also his line reading of things like, wieners, I got hot wieners here. that's the kind of stuff that gets me every time I watch the movie. But we look at someone like Molly Shannon and she probably would have been fresh off of SNL around this time. So to me, this is either it's stunt casting or it's anticipating who Molly Shannon would actually become, like a rising star award.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. I don't know if I have others. Do you have others?
I have a couple, yes. So we've got a montage. I'm going to say specifically for the scene where Josie becomes popular and we end up in the mall and so on. Borrow time, because we know that she's got a firm deadline of when she needs to produce this, but also it's only a matter of time before the secret comes out.
Good one. Oh, we have a prom. We have a prom.
Yeah, we have a prom. There we go.
Yeah. I don't regret watching this, Joe. I don't understand, but I don't regret watching it.
You know what? That's fair. I maybe programmed this in part because, yes, it's an anniversary and that's a good reason to celebrate something. Maybe the episode gets a bit of traction, but I think I'm just hopeful that some other folks will come out of the woodwork and tell me that I'm not a complete loon for still holding on to this title.
I also do feel like sometimes you're just trying to teach me things.
I'm trying to help you remain culturally relevant with this quarter century old text.
I appreciate that. If you do want to write in and tell Joe that Joe is not crazy, you can find us on social media, HKHSpod, or on the hashtag HKHSpod. Joe, where do they find you?
I can be reached at B Stole My Remote, and that's the letter B.
I'm at Brenna C. Gray. That's Gray with an A. And anything long form, like a lengthy meditation on why this movie isn't as creepy as Brenna thinks it is, you can send that
totally
to
Rufus.
You can send it to hkhspod@gmail.com. But if you say Rufus in your email, I'm not reading it on the air, just FYI.
Wow. What about Fetch?
We can't make it happen, Joe.
Okay. Okay,
folks. So we are looking ahead. Next week's episode is changing gears dramatically. We're going back to mythology, and we're going to check out the newest adaptation of the Percy Jackson series, Percy Jackson and the Olympians, season one.
Yeah. Yeah. People demanded it, and it seemed like an opportunity to make you revisit a text you did not love the first time around.
I keep debating whether I need to reread the book or not, and I'm really hoping it's not.
As someone who watched the series week to week, I found I remembered the film and therefore the book well enough that I could have a 30-minute conversation about it.
Okay. All right. I'm going to let this happen. It's going to be fine. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, folks. So until next time, I will see you on the page.
And I will see you on the screen. Shall we play some YA bingo with this?
Let's do it. Okay, but I have to get the card.
Of course you do. You know what? You were having such a good run, and now same old Brenna. Can't break you of the habit.